Welcome to the Team Flower Podcast. My name is Kelly, and we are gathering today to inspire you in your work with flowers.
Hey guys, I'm back. It's Janine, the Team Flower content builder and community planner, just in case you don't know who I am. I am here because I want to share with you a few tips on freelancing. If you don't know what freelancing is, that's okay. I'm going to tell you. Basically, it's when you're being contracted by another floral designer to help them do what they need to do. And let me tell you, oh, it is a joy. I love it. I think it is so much fun. My husband and I decided to take a little bit of a break on my own floral design business, because we had two babies pretty much back to back. So we just needed a few more weekends in our lives as a family. So instead, I have chosen to work with some flower friends around me. And I just think it's great. It's a great way to stay in the floral industry if you need to take a little bit of a break from your own business. It's also a really great way to get your foot in the door and get your hands on some flowers and get some design practice if you're thinking about starting your own floral design business, but you're not really sure what to do or how to do it. Freelancing for other floral designers in your area is a great way to do that. You can also visit www.howtobecomeaflorist.com. It's our brand new class. It is full of wonderful information for those of you who are just beginning or thinking about beginning. You even get to have live chats with Kelly, which is an invaluable experience. So make sure you check that out if you are a beginner florist. Now, back to freelancing. Like I said, it's a great way to get your feet wet in the floristry world or to stay connected in the industry if you're taking a step back from your own business. There are a lot of best tips and practices of freelancing, and we even have some articles on our free resources about freelancing, but I wanted to share a few that you may not find elsewhere. A little bit unheard of, just things you might not think about. So maybe this will help you in thinking about them. I certainly didn't think about them before. So one, check with your boss on what you need to wear. Most of the time, the people that you're going to work for, they're going to tell you what you need to wear, but sometimes they forget and just think that you should know. So ask them. If you're unsure at all, ask them. I will tell you, most often you're going to need to wear closed-toed shoes, but every florist has a different uniform. Some may wear all black. Some may have custom t-shirts that they want you to wear. Some may have aprons that they'll give you, so on and so forth. Check with them on that. If you have long hair, make sure you wear it up in a ponytail, in a bun, or in a braid. I'm telling you, you do not want pieces of your hair catching on the baby's breath, blowing in the wind, being captured by the photographer. You don't want that. So go ahead and do yourself and your boss a favor. Tie your hair back. Also, it's really helpful if you can bring your own snips, your own pair of clippers. Write your name on them too. Here in the high country in Boone, I think that all of the florists here, we all have Joyce Chin snips. But what's so fun to me, and we didn't even coordinate this, everyone has different colors that their team uses. So one florist has all white, one florist has blue, one florist has yellow, one florist has red. And it's really fun whenever we freelance for one another and we bring our own color. It's pretty easy to tell whose is whose, but even so, that might not be the case in your community. So bring your own, write your name on them so that everyone knows that they are yours. Okay, so this next one. Remember, you're not the one in charge because you're working for someone else. At the same time, you might need to make some decisions on your own. So work with confidence whatever you're doing. If you do have a question, find your boss, ask them just to make sure, but it doesn't need to be every little detail, you know, work with confidence. make some decisions on your own. This last one is probably one of my favorite ones that I have implemented in my own life, in my own freelancing. Have a goal to learn one new thing every time you freelance. So maybe you learn a brand new flower, or maybe you learn a new mechanic, or maybe you learn that you can use zip ties for something you didn't know you could use them for. Or, you know, there's just an endless supply of knowledge, and we should all be seeking to learn more and grow more in what we do. And freelancing is such a great way to do that, because you might even learn something that you want to implement in your own business whenever you start it or whenever you get back to it. So I encourage everyone in the industry to freelance at some point in your career, because it's a great experience to humble yourself, to work for another florist, to learn from them, and also to have fun. You're there, you still get to play with flowers, you still get to do what you love, but the pressure isn't on you to make all the decisions. You're not the one in charge. So get out there, make some flower friends, work with them, work for them, wear your hair up, bring your own snips, find out what you need to wear, work with confidence, and learn new things. And now, we are going to learn from Wild Root Flower Company all about the business side of a flower farm. Ooh, it is packed full of great information. Stay tuned. You are going to love this episode.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're passionate about flowers. That is for sure. Doesn't necessarily mean, though, that you're in a job that you're feeling passionate about. I have a feeling there's quite a few people that listen to the podcast because they are in a job that they are not super jazzed about, thinking about, is a career in flowers right for me? Well, the How to Become a Florist course is here, and it is going to help you get on the path to a meaningful, passion-filled career in flowers that makes a big difference in the world. You can use all that passion that you've got inside you for good, sell sustainable products, and make, my favorite part, people smile. Life is too short to have a colorless career that you aren't passionate about, and I hope that you'll consider enrolling in How to Become a Florist today. It's an awesome course. People are loving it. It starts tomorrow, and it's all the industry connections you need, the flower knowledge, the business knowledge, and those step-by-step arranging demonstrations. So howtobecomeaflorist.com. It's exactly what you need for this point in the process. And we're right there by your side to help you, you know, figure it out and see if this is where you need to go right now or in the future. So head over to howtobecomeaflorist.com, and I'll see you in class tomorrow. Today, our special guest is Lindsay Beal. She has Wild Root Flower Co. in Marietta, Ohio. She is the owner and very passionate about connecting the community with nature and filling their lives with more and more beauty. They share their flowers through a seasonal U-pick, on-farm workshops, and event design. And they also sell their flowers at local farmers markets, grocery stores, and CSA. They are busy. You can find them on Instagram at wildroot_flowerco, on Facebook at Wildroot Blooms, and the website is wildrootflowerco.com. Wildrootflowerco.com. All right. Welcome, Lindsay. Hey.
Hi, Callie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, wow. It is August at the time of this recording, and I imagine that the fields are just busting at the seams. What's it like there?
Oh, yeah, they are. We kind of had a slow start to the season. It's been cooler here. We're in Southeast Ohio. We're zone 6A. And so typically we have, you know, pretty warm springs and stuff is just ready in the fields by usually like July 4th. And it was just pretty delayed. It's been delayed this year. So it's a very welcome return to see the fields just sort of like bursting with color right now.
That's cool. Lindsay, what'd you do before you were a flower farmer?
So my background has been in horticulture. So I went to Ohio State, and this is sort of, ag is kind of the only thing I've ever done. I started at a garden center when I was 16 and just loved it. I remember thinking there's adults that work here. You know, you could do this for a living. And so I started looking at schools and found Ohio State had a really good ag horticulture program. And so I went there, graduated, and then sort of found myself naturally in the landscape industry, which I honestly didn't love. But it was just sort of the place where most of the careers were in that field. So I found myself doing landscape design, some account management of like maintenance accounts. I lived in the Baltimore, DC metro area for a while. And then just sort of stumbled upon flower farming when I moved back to my hometown and thought, this is really a perfect fit for me. I knew I wanted to own a business at some point in my life, and I love teaching and connecting with people. And so it was just been a really good opportunity to bring agriculture to the community. That's kind of a summary of how I ended up there, but yeah, kind of always in ag of some form.
Very cool. Tell me, what's your favorite part of bringing agriculture to the community? You guys are involved in a lot of different, you have a lot of different types of revenue streams that directly, mm-hmm. you know, kind of go out there and bring people in. Tell us a little bit more about those. What do you love about them?
Yeah. So it's interesting you bring that up because I think we're year five right now in the business. And when I started, it was like, I said I would take money from anybody that would take our flowers. And so it sort of ballooned into this kind of, like you said, lots of revenue streams. And so now we're kind of looking at those and going like, okay, where do we want to spend our time and energy? Because, you know, each of those revenue streams is sort of like managing your own company, you know, mm-hmm. like in the CSA. Yep. So we're in the process of looking at that now and just sort of evaluating what it is or what direction we want to go. But my favorite is workshops. I absolutely love having people here on the farm, and it's, you know, to me, I grew up in that environment, so it seems very normal and natural, but to a lot of people, you know, to be able to see goats and chickens and the flowers and the actual process in which they're grown, you know, they are not familiar with it. So it's, to me, that's really my favorite part of the having the farm and bringing that to the community is for them to be able to be here and actually experience it themselves.
That's cool. How do you get the word out in your community about those workshops?
We do have a really good local following on like social media and such, but we have a pretty solid email list. That we get that too, but we also, we do have a farmer's market we attend. So that's sort of just mm-hmm. how I think it started. You know, farmer's market kind of feels like a rite of passage when you have a farm, and we started there and just continued to kind of grow. And so people, we try to make to the workshops and things like special events. We don't have them, you know, every single week. So there just kind of creates a uniqueness to that. And then I think there's sort of a buzz in the community about, you know, one coming up, if we have a workshop coming up, or, you know, we just had a sunset U-pick that was phenomenal. You know, in my mind, I thought, well, if we have, you know, 50 people or something, you know, I kind of always underestimate it in my mind. And it just, the cars just piled in on Friday night. I just was absolutely blown away. I mean, we probably had over 200 people here in an evening.
Oh, wow.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so awesome. Well, I love and appreciate farmers markets so much because I do feel like that they are really transforming, they're getting flowers in front of people on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And just really drawing people into that world. And there's that opportunity for that, you know, eye to eye, face to face, human connection. That's so important. So they all kind of go hand in hand a little bit, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the slow flowers movement, that having people to understand where flowers actually come from. I think the farmers markets are a wonderful opportunity for people to say, you know, like have that conversation to say like, oh, these were locally grown, you know, and what that actually means and what it takes to get them from our fields to the farmer's market. And I think that some of our best advertising has been at the farmers market and just having real conversations with people. And they share, you know, I'm sure you've had this experience, but people share if they, a flower reminds them of their grandmother or if somebody, you know, grew that flower. And it's just such a neat way to connect that you just can't do online. And mm-hmm. I just appreciate that about the mm-hmm. market. So.
Yeah. 100%. There is, it's one of those revenue stream. It's a revenue stream that maybe isn't, I don't know. I haven't done it before, but I imagine it's not probably like the highest earner. Unless you maybe go all in and you have many, you know, that you've scaled to different farmers markets or mm-hmm. whatever, but it does have that piece that feeds into, you know, other elements of it. And, it's really
and
cool.
The other farming community too, you mm-hmm. know, you kind of connected and there's our market's wonderful as far as, you know, the vendors, people supporting each other. And, you know, if we don't have something and some, you know, it's like, go see so-and-so down there. She might have those flowers this week, you know? So that just, it makes it, it just feels great to have that in a market too.
Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah. Well, since we've been talking a little bit about, you know, multiple revenues and multiple revenue streams and things like that, what kind of tips might you have for somebody who is feeling really like, okay, I have all these things going on, I'm feeling a little bit disorganized. Like, do you have any tips for keeping things organized and helping, you know, determine like what are the priorities right now? And,
Yeah, sure. I guess I'll speak to, you know, for what we do, I have a team of, 5 people that work for us and really, is communication, you know, is kind of our biggest thing. We have lots of ways that we stay organized within our business. We use Google Sheets a lot. We use it for harvest tracking, event planning. So we have 2 events coming up on Saturday where we have a sunrise U-pick design workshop in the morning. And then we have our farm to table design and dine in the evening. And so we have separate sheets for those. And it's just sort of how we keep, you know, each other on track as far as what needs to be done. I think I have felt that overwhelm and that experience. I've experienced that overwhelm before. And last year, ironically, I think I did the least amount of physical farm work last year, and it was our best year. And I think it's because I was able to delegate and I realized that I'm my limiting factor in my business and that, you know, I hire great people and we have a great team. And so we're able to sort of support each other in that. So I would say if you're struggling and you have, you know, a bunch of million things going on, is, you know, learning to lean on other people. That's been for sure has been one of the biggest things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what, we do have weekly meetings too, that kind of help, keep us on track I call them thought downloads, but I always kind of do a thought download on Sundays, to get all of those to-dos that kind of stay in my head out on paper. And then we get them scheduled for the week and we all just kind of talk about it. Kind of clear up some of that brain space that we can have stuff floating around in. So
That's so good. A weekly meeting is really powerful, especially today with COVID. And there's just a lot of shifting, changing priorities, a lot of shifting, changing plans. Things are, mm-hmm. I didn't know it was possible for things to feel like that they were moving faster and slower all at the same time, but just that weekly connect to be like, hey team, I know last week this was like where we were headed, but mm-hmm. now we're doing this over here and, you know, go team, let's do it. You know, it's so good.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about, maybe like business planning for the future, kind of as you look back over your 5 years of getting things started. Can you give us a peek into how it developed and grew and where you think you might head into the future? Some things you've learned along the way.
Yeah, sure. So we, I kind of talked about a little bit there, but when we first started, you know, I just knew that I wanted to grow flowers and I had worked in the wedding industry prior to this. And I thought, well, you know, we'll do weddings, and I wanted to teach workshops. And so when I first started, that's just how we got this model going. The first year I did a CSA. We kind of, the girls who work with me joke and say, I can't do anything small. So, you know, it was just like, okay, you know, we just kept, expanding as far as what we were doing. And looking back now, like 5 years in, we're able to sort of step back. You know, one example was, we used to do photography on the farm where people could come and take pictures, and it was great. It was wonderful advertisement for us because people would post their photos and share. But you know, the farm, my home is on the farm. So there, it became apparent that there really needed to be some more personal space for me to have some quiet, because, you know, the season is very short. It goes from March to October. And it's a lot of work, you know, in that window. So, learning to kind of set those boundaries with my business, it's mostly for myself, because to keep myself sane, but, yeah, so we've started to look at our areas that we want to cut back. Our UPIC is wonderful. Our workshops, we really want to continue to do that. But I did make the decision that we're going to step back from weddings actually in 2022, which was a really, it was a big decision, but I think, it was one that really will, I think, serve me and our team and, you know, inevitably the business in the long run, and make us, you know, be able to show up better, in what we're doing elsewhere. So yeah, I think that's probably where we're going to look to head, is just, keep doing what we're doing, but kind of scale back as far as our offerings, I guess, if that makes sense. And I mm-hmm. wish people had given me that advice early on. And I don't know that I fully understood what it meant, you know, to really focus in on one thing, and do it really well. And so I think we're maybe, I don't want to say we're backpedaling, but I think we're kind of refocusing on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think that the business is alive. It's a breathing thing. And I think that a lot of times there's this kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's a little bit like breathing. It like expands, it contracts, it expands, it contracts. And every time that process happens, it's stronger and stronger and building muscle. Right. So mm-hmm. I just feel like, yeah, that kind of like trimming out and that pruning out is going to, the thing that you're focusing on, it'll grow, it'll get stronger and stronger. And then you might, who knows, at some point you might want to add back in weddings and the focus yep. shifts a little bit. And it's just, it's a fun process of building it and just being aware of what the community needs and being that flower expert, loving the world through flowers there. It's so good. So yeah. Thankful for what you're doing in Southeast Ohio. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think that staying adaptable, even with COVID last year, just taught me so much just as a business owner, because, you know, we all had these event calendars full, you know, and workshops planned and weddings on the books. And it was just like the plug got pulled and my calendar was clear. And I had this strange, like anxious feeling, but at the same time, it was like, well, that's kind of nice. That's what I was wanting, you know, but everything else that went with it was so loaded. But, yeah, my mom has a saying that says, where your attention goes, your energy flows. And it's kind of like last year, I really just wanted to focus on bringing, you know, slowing down, bringing flowers to the community. And I think that's really what happened. Mm. So much joy was just spread through that in a time that just didn't feel like there was a ton of it, you know? So,
yeah.
I think that, I think you're right. I think it will, the ebb and flow of the business is kind of always there. It's just mm-hmm. learning to be adaptable with it. So.
Yeah. 100%. Let's do a growing specific question. We've talked a lot about business. Let's do something fun and practical. So it's time to start, you know, the planting process. Do you like direct sowing, starting seeds inside? I know some flowers, you know, like maybe prefer one over the other, but tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that, how you make those decisions and what you do.
Yeah. So we do kind of a mix. So we do direct seed and we do transplanting, and it really is dependent on the particular, I would say the large majority of what we plant is a transplant, and we grow pretty much everything except Lysianthus. There are a lot of ways to kill a plant in 16 weeks. So I buy them from Farmer Bailey. So those little babies, they come healthy and beautiful. So we lean to them to get those to us. But we have noticed that our direct seeded or direct planted plants, the end result, they're often healthier. So if we can not transplant it and we can direct seed it, we're really trying to do more of that. There is, of course, there's always an element of like the weeding and getting that to take off. And there's a little bit of a, like, you know, if I'm putting a transplant out, I know I'm planting 128 plants versus with your direct seeding, there's a little bit of a, you know, I want to say risk, but you know, you may not get the solid germination that you're going for, but the end result is a much healthier plant. So we do try to, do quite a bit of transplanting stuff, and we're constantly trying to see what does it, you know, already in our zone. It's like, oh, well, that Lovin' a Mist overwintered and whatever. So, yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag, I guess.
It is really interesting how you can plant, you know, three of the exact same thing that came out of the thing, and two of them totally take off and go huge gangbusters. And then the other one just, there it is, looking sad. Why does that happen?
Well, I think there's a stress, you know, anytime you're going to plant a seed in a cell pack and you're watering it, if it happens to be that seed or that flat goes, you know, gets too dry or it's stressed really at all, it does affect the end flower, you know, in every stage of it. So, you know, the flowers might be smaller. The plant is going to be a little bit stressed, more prone to disease. You know, sometimes when they get transplanted, they go through transplant shock. So yeah, we had, it's been three years ago now, we direct seeded just some zinnias in the front of our beds, and right next to it, same variety, same color, we did transplants. And it just happened to be that way. It wasn't that we were planning to do this experiment. But this was sort of what shifted my mindset to like, okay, well, this was a perfect example that the direct seeded zinnias had hardly any powdery mildew. They were probably 14, 16 inches taller, more blooms. They just were an overall healthier plant. And then to see the transplants beside it, you know, it was just very, very apparent that it was like, oh, okay, this plant didn't have the stress of the transplant and us watering it. And, you know, just from seed to bloom at that point, it had an easier life going just in the ground. So that was a pretty neat experiment to kind of see.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine that you dig all of your dahlias, where you're located, and we usually dig all of ours up too, but I missed one last year. And it just so happened to be planted on the front of the house where it gets a lot of sun during the warmest part of the day, up against the brick. And that the ground must have stayed warm enough for it to be able to come back up. And the difference too, you know, not a seed, of course, but the difference there compared to the ones that I planted out is really, really substantial. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We get a few that stay in our field. We move our dahlia bed around just for disease pressure and rotate it. And this past year, it was the same thing. We've had a few over winter, and it's so tempting when we're digging 3,000, you know, at the end of the season, we're like, you know, well, they could come back, but you know, we just have too much time invested in our stock to really try it. But, yeah, it's tempting when you see it come back and you see how beautiful and healthy they are that second year.
Yeah. It's a risk. It's a risk in all the way, either way. And that's the, that's the thing that's so tricky, right? About flower farming and gardening. It's like, you don't know for sure if whatever you did just worked because it's going to take a little time to be able to tell. But I think you really nailed an important part, which is that the health of the seedling very early on is incredibly, incredibly important.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you shared that. Any quick little tips that you might have for seedlings in those early days? Don't let them dry out.
Not letting them dry out would be, I think, really that most important. And we don't, this is personal preference, but we don't fertilize either initially, just because we think it kind of, they're just settling into their new home, you know, where we've moved them out. We also plant in early morning. So we typically, if it's going to get really, really hot and the sun's going to be scorching, we try to get those plants in the ground, you know, first thing, get them watered in really well, or in an evening would be one that we do. And we just try to, most of our seedlings have not, they aren't to the point where they're root bound. So we don't have to sort of tease those roots out, but of course, starting with great ground, you know, putting them in well tilled and nutrient rich ground always is a plus for any transplant. But yeah, that would be a couple things I could think of.
Yeah, cool. Well, last question, anything that you would like to leave with the flower community today? If there's something that you could shout from the rooftops that you feel like that you carry for the flower community, this is the time to say it.
Oh, wow. I would just say you know, if you're new to it, new to the flower industry, or you're been in it for a while, I think year five for me now, I just feel more comfortable just showing up as I am. And I think that's what my following, you know, it's the way I'm able to connect with people, is just being able to just show up when it's messy, when you've made a mistake. But just, you know, keep showing up and keep trying, you know, to me is the important part, is just getting the flowers out to people and getting, you know, the joy that they bring. And it's just, I think that our industry sometimes can be intimidating, just the amazing art that other florists create, right? So we can be in this comparative, mindset. And, so yeah, I would just say, you're doing a great job. Just keep at it. Just be yourself.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Lindsay. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it as well.
Hi there. My name is Allison B. Young. I'm a writer and floral designer. I have started the podcast Gathered Storied Botanicals to marry those two loves together. And I am going to read a piece I wrote for Team Flower called Funeral Floral Design, Navigating Grief with Kind-Hearted Creativity. Designing funeral floral arrangements can be a challenge in many ways. In this article, you'll discover practical tips and examples to help your clients navigate grief while honoring their loved one, all while infusing kind-hearted creativity in your funeral floral arrangements. There are many factors to consider with any floral arrangement: the colors or style requested by the client, their budget, and understanding where the flowers will be placed. We even consider a client's emotional state. As floral designers, we have a unique opportunity to glimpse into clients' or families' inner world. We see it when we design wedding flowers or in delivering a single arrangement to someone's home or hospital bedside. And this is also true of funeral arrangements. And it's this emotional state that can make designing funeral flowers a delicate or even awkward exchange with a client. We're no longer navigating the emotional landscape of excitement or joy from a wedding or new baby, but we're in the landscape of grief and overwhelm. Rather than designing florals that feel as stiff or cold as the obligatory "I'm sorry for your loss" sentiment, this florist has learned that there's room to stretch your creativity and kind-heartedness, and in turn, offer some comfort to a client. By engaging with the deceased's loved ones, it's possible to connect with them and their inner world. We can use their memories to create designs, and we can design a family's singular expression of honoring their loved one. Think of it as taking a loved one's memory and translating it through the blooms and foliage. Here are a few considerations on how to approach a funeral arrangement and capture your client's memory. Let in grief's discomfort. It can be easy to get swept up in a bride's excitement when you first sit down to hear her ideas about what flowers and colors she'd like for her wedding. However, when a client for a funeral piece calls or walks into your shop, there likely won't be that same ease or eagerness of conversation. It might even be really uncomfortable. I felt like a deer in the headlights the first time I spoke with a client ordering funeral flowers. Whether your tendency is to shut down or to wrap your arms around them, you can still strike a balance between staying professional and finding a genuine human connection that can feel comforting to your client. Allow for silences. Begin by taking a breath. Depending on the circumstances, allowing space for your client to cry or get choked up might be the best place to start. Allow things to feel uncomfortable or awkward if that gives them time to catch their breath and compose their feelings. This also allows you a chance to gather your thoughts, prepare to take any notes, and read the room. Call them by their name. Make sure you get the name of the deceased loved one. Simply asking a client what the name of their loved one is can serve as a pressure valve. It's orienting for both your client and you. It also makes it a more personal experience for your client. They aren't just another customer, and their loved one isn't just another order. Begin to engage and remember them together. From there, you may find that asking about their loved one's personality or a memorable trait or story about them can serve both you as the designer and the client. It's likely that there wasn't a great deal of forethought on what flowers the client would like for a funeral arrangement in the same way there would be for a wedding. So this is a great place to begin your own creative process or brainstorming. If it's appropriate, providing an example connected to a story like the ones mentioned below may help your client know what would best honor their loved one. With that said, make sure to read the room. If it's not emotionally appropriate to offer examples, then it's okay to hold off too. Example one, a personalized funeral arrangement honoring a gardener. This bright orange altarpiece below is part of a trio of floral arrangements made for a gardener. His three children had come into the shop and described him as a real character, loving bright colors in his garden. Listening and watching the siblings reflect and remember their father together was key for informing my creative decisions, like using shades of orange and peach and including blooms that might not traditionally show up in a funeral arrangement, such as fritillaria. Explore other memories. Sometimes asking about a loved one's personality isn't always the best route for gathering ideas or comforting a client. Grief is complicated, and we can delicately lead our clients by asking for specific joyful memories or things that their loved one also loved. They may be able to open up more about other aspects of their loved one's life or even their own life. Sometimes this can feel more like detective work than floral work, but these context clues can lead to more creative designs and demonstrate your ability to be a good listener. Listen actively. Active listening is often associated with psychology, but it can be especially effective when having difficult or emotionally charged conversations. Arlen Kunick wrote in Very Well Mind that active listening is the process of listening attentively while someone else speaks, paraphrasing and reflecting back what is said, and withholding judgment and advice. Stay mindful of your own verbal and nonverbal cues to show you're engaged throughout, even if emotions run high. Think of it as flexing empathy like a muscle, something that will definitely ease any tension in discussing funeral arrangements. Active listening is a powerful tool for letting your clients feel heard and seen without taking on the role of therapist. Example two, a personalized funeral arrangement inspired by the Romanian countryside. This casket spray was for another client burying a father. The client described traveling with her father to his home country of Romania as a little girl. The birch trees and wheat fields stood out in her memory. These seemingly small details felt poetic and became significant in this casket spray's design. The flowers don't have to represent the deceased loved one themselves, but can echo the experience of remembering them in a specific place or time. Show, don't tell. So what happens when you can't get the client to open up about anything concrete? Maybe it's too painful, or perhaps they simply don't know what to say. There are about as many ways to grieve as there are flowers, so stay mindful of how your client responds to your questions. In these situations, try letting the flowers do the talking. Often just showing the client the flower selection can offer both of you a little reprieve from any overwhelming feelings, and the client can point out specific blooms that capture something about their loved one they couldn't articulate. A walk-in cooler can offer both a figurative and literal cooling off for your client. Clarity can comfort. You may not even speak with the deceased loved ones. In some cases, the funeral director may call you on the family's behalf. This can alleviate any tension from an emotionally charged conversation, but you still want to put your active listening skills to use. The key is to get as much information as you can on what the family is requesting for the flowers, so you minimize any miscommunication and streamline the whole process to make it easier on them. Example 3, a personalized funeral arrangement that's soft and feminine. Speaking with a client about her mother's funeral flowers, she was simply at a loss. She didn't want it to look like funeral flowers, but wasn't sure what else to say. For this florist, that meant something soft, full, and had movement instead of the stiff symmetry often seen in traditional casket sprays. It meant something feminine, and it meant permission to go beyond the white and green color palette. After walking the client through the cooler, she pointed out soft green roses as something to include. Even with little information to go on, you can still make connections that lend to your own creative process and reflect what your client wants. Loving the world through flowers, even in seasons of grief. Losing a loved one can be the hardest thing to go through. It's also a universal experience. Because it's something we can all relate to in some capacity, you'll be able to find ways to walk the line of being a sympathetic ear for your client and maintain your professionalism in getting the information you need to fill the order. These insights can help you walk that line so you don't feel as though you're walking on eggshells. It can also sharpen your active listening skills, which will serve you well regardless of what kind of floral arrangement you discuss with clients. Use these considerations as signposts to guide you through grief, honored in floral design. They can help you tune into your own intuition when speaking with clients and reveal a new side of your own creativity, a kind-hearted creativity that offers solace.
Thanks for listening. You can find us over at teamflower.org for more resources like this one. And while you're there, check out the Team Flower Conference. That's where we all gather to learn and grow together. It is magic. You are magic. The work that you do with flowers matters. And we are so grateful for you. Keep going. You're doing a good job.